The Rune Finder by Carl Andreessen. Chapter 9. The River. They didn't go down the hatch they had come through the day before. Instead, Logan and Trasig made their way into another corridor, then climbed a rope ladder upward through a tall shaft. Logan could hear the muffled noise of what sounded like music coming from above. It sounded like some kind of guitar that was out of tune, and it seemed to be playing above them through the opening. It didn't cause Trasig to hesitate as he opened the hatch and crawled up into the room above. Logan climbed the last few rungs as he looked up to see a few more dwarves looming at the entrance.
"Trasig and the human have arrived," mumbled one of the dwarves into a shortwave radio.
They found themselves standing in a run-down building with no electricity. The windows were painted black to keep outsiders from seeing in. Candles were lit throughout the room, casting long shadows on the walls. The rain and wind made a strange sound of rushing, then moaning outside. Dust-covered machines were lined up throughout the room. They were old, worthless slot machines, long run down. A dwarf sat on a bar stool, strumming a homemade guitar and humming. Logan realized he was standing in the once-forgotten Belle Isle Casino. What was once a place for good times, weddings, and losing your wallet, was now boarded up like a fortress.
"Well, here's what I'm thinking, Logan," said Trasig, as the two of them made their way through the building. "The weather's poor enough, we don't need to crawl through the tunnels. We have cover of clouds and rain, lucky for you."
"Yeah, lucky for me."
Logan was serious as he said this. Crawling through a mile of piping under the river once in his life was enough.
"We take a small raft across the river until we reach the lighthouse at Tricentennial Park. Then we make our way to the Globe Trading Company building and go back underground. There are tunnels that go all the way to Randolph Street from there. There are tunnels that go all the way under your police station.
Then what do you suggest we do, Logan?
Go in the front door and ask them to return the lady?"
"We'll figure it out when we get there."
Logan didn't have a thought-out plan. He would have to trust his instincts on this one. They left the casino, going right through the guarded front doors, went under the tan-colored brick archways on the patio, and made their way toward the waterfront. The rain was coming down in almost a fine mist. It was as if the clouds couldn't decide to let go in a rush, or just settle on the city like a cloud of wet fog. The city was gray and bleak against the smoke-filled horizon. Trasig was right. The odds of running into people that could recognize him were slim on a day like today. They went toward the east about 100 yards until they reached a murky-looking canal. They followed it along the north, crossed over 2 roads, then followed the canal bank as it turned back again toward the south. The Detroit River was rough from the wind. It would be dangerous to cross in a small raft, but much easier to make their way across unseen. Logan could just make out the gray arches of the bridge to Belle Isle to the north. Its concentric arches were dark, with the fresh rain running down their sides, the salty fingers of the river water reaching up to meet them.
"Who runs the bridge these days?" whispered Logan, as they moved branches off the small raft. "We blew down our end of the bridge to keep trespassers off our island,"
grunted Trasig as he edged the front of the boat toward the river. "The elves were tired of smugglers using the bridge to bring things in illegally. The whole thing is lined with 50-caliber turrets and all sorts of nasty rigs. Anything goes under that bridge that doesn't belong on the river, it gets chewed up like a cupcake in a cop car. No offense."
"None taken. I'm far from being a cop at this point. Those days are over for me. Now let's get this thing in the water."
With Trasig in the front of the raft, Logan shoved off the muddy bank and leapt in. The choppy waters made rowing strenuous. It seemed as though with each draw forward, the dark lapping waters would draw them back just as far. The dwarf was stronger than his appearances revealed. Logan wasn't fond of the water, and had never taken to swimming in his life. With all the changes that had happened to the human race, it was well known that certain animal species had shifted as well. He didn't care to find out what might be in the water. A sloshing puddle rushed its way back and forth across the bottom of the raft as they reached midway toward the other bank. As the puddle grew deeper, so did Logan's concerns. His thoughts loomed about what their course of action should be when they reached the other side. He was a good enough cop in his 16 years of service to do some damage, but waltzing into the station with a bomb-toting dwarf and a couple of guns was just plain stupid.
"Trasig," Logan started. "None of this is going to work. I've been around the block long enough to know that we won't last 5 seconds in there like this."
Not to worry, Trasig stopped rowing for a moment.
"You have the runes of power. It's about time you started figuring out what that means."
Logan contemplated the odd possibilities that the inconspicuous stones in his pocket might actually amount to something more than a bracelet. There was no reasonable reason why they would do anything, but he couldn't wrap his mind around how he got off the roof and ended up underground. He hadn't dreamed of it. He didn't pass out, take a leap off the roof, or do anything other than grab the stones from Rumil. He also couldn't explain the reason they would heat up against his leg every time his emotions were elevated. He held the string of stones in his hand and looked them over through the drips of rain spattering off his palm. Trasig had stopped rowing. His curious glare was uncomfortable. Logan wasn't sure if the string of stones would even fit around his forearm. Trying it on would be a time-consuming hassle, with one wet hand and a rocking boat. He rolled up his right sleeve and laid the string of runestones across his forearm and felt a sharp pain course through his flesh. There was searing pressure. The string of stones was gripping itself down on his arm like a piece of twisted razor wire. Logan clawed at the stones, but the pain seemed to shift into a sharp burning. His fist clenched and writhed in useless agony. A smell of smoke and burning flesh was pungent in the humid air. His back arched and his legs buckled. He was frantic. The pain overtook him. It shot through his bones, up through his groin until his stomach turned. The stones were glowing in a wreath of white flame. A rush of darkness enveloped him. Then the pain was gone. Had he passed out? The thought crossed his mind that he must have either slipped unconscious, or worse, he was a dead man. He felt as though he was drifting, like a speck of dust, by a warm breeze. Everything surrounding him was thick darkness. He held his hands up in front of his face. Not a dream. In the distance, he could see a speck of white light that seemed to glow. The light soon stretched itself into a shaft, a pure, brilliant white that seemed to stretch vertical for eternity above and below. Logan couldn't help but think he was dead. If that was the case, he was happy to see that there was at least a stereotypical light at the end of the tunnel, rather than a shaft into an abyss. Logan felt himself being drawn toward the shaft of light. It was as though, by thinking about the light, he became a part of it. He wanted to feel its purity and warmth, to breathe it in his lungs and have it wash him clean from all his troubles. Somehow he couldn't bring himself to take a breath. A sense of confusion began to envelop Logan, and it felt as though the air around him was pressing inward. It was suffocating, and somehow pulling him downward and away from the light. He tried to move. He had to free himself from the darkness, but the gravity of this place was too heavy. A strong course of pain shot up through his spine and felt as though it burst outward through his right arm. Logan opened his eyes to realize he was under the water. Logan felt drained of energy, and although he crawled through the water trying to reach the surface, he felt his weight sinking down. He was reaching for anything to bring him to the surface. His lungs felt as though they were about to explode, and a reflexive cough let the last of his air go racing toward the surface in a stream of tiny bubbles. Something solid bumped against his left shoulder. Logan was frantic as he grasped it and felt it pull him upward. He broke through the choppy surface water, and in his desperate attempt to gasp for air, he swallowed a mouthful of river. Trasig strained and pulled on Logan's jacket and leg, almost tipping the raft on its side into the water, and was able to pull him on board once again. Logan coughed and fought for air. He clutched his stomach in pain and threw up in the bottom of the boat. His head was pounding from the strain.
"You could have done that over the side, you know,"
Trasig grumbled as he helped lift Logan to a seated position.
"What happened? I swear I was dead for a minute."
Logan struggled to talk.
"Well, to get to the point, you quivered in the bottom of the boat like a fish out of water. Then something rather interesting happened. I couldn't quite put my finger on."
Trasig moved back to the front of the boat and sat down with his arms folded, staring up at the clouds.
"How did I get in the water, Trasig?"
"Logan, my friend, you lit up like a light bulb. Hovered above the boat in a ball of light and then dropped like a rock into the river."
"You're saying I hovered? What do you mean I hovered in the air?"
"Just like that elf on television." Logan pulled the sleeve of his army jacket back and looked at the stones on his arm. The stones had embedded deep into the flesh. He could feel the stones just under the skin's surface. But wrapping around his entire arm were strange symbols. The same symbols that were once on the stones were somehow printed on his skin. There was no pain in his arm anymore, and Logan touched the rune symbols on his skin. Something was translucent about them. They moved as he touched them.
"You might want to consider what will happen if you rearrange those markings on your arm before you do it,"
Trasig warned.
"The Rouge said you use those markings in... what did he call them?"
"In combinations," finished Logan.
"They were in the same order as Rumil had them when he'd done this little magic trick for the whole city to see."
"Well, it would seem that if you move those into different combinations, something different could happen."
"Like what? What if I move these things around and all of a sudden I incinerate you and half the river?"
"Well, what are you waiting for?" Trasig had a smile across his face. "Give him a try already." The thought of experimenting with the symbols was more than tempting, but the severe pain he had just experienced made Logan more than cautious. He rolled his sleeve down and shook his head. Trasig looked disappointed, but soon was rowing the boat toward the shore once again. Logan felt confused, and the familiar sensation crept up the back of his neck. It was time to take another pill. He took the dispenser out of his wet pocket and spilled some of the pills into the filthy water in the bottom of the boat. He had a few left. They would last him another day and a half, maybe longer if he broke them in half.